Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you always for joining me. It's such a pleasure to have you on the show with me because, as you know, this show is dedicated to empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. So it's great having you. I have a wonderful conversation planned for today, a really important conversation, and I know that this will really support everyone in getting healthier and wiser. So we're about to have an amazing time. Before I get into the conversation, for those of you who may be listening for the first time, I always like to welcome my new listeners. I always like to encourage you to go check me out more on Facebook, which is What Women Must Know. Like me there. Go to my website, What Women Must Know, because not only do I send you some special reports when you opt in, but I send all my radio shows to you every week. So in case you're not listening live here every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, you will be sure to catch every single show and not miss out at all. God forbid, you do not want to miss out on any one of my shows. So sign up, opt in, like me. All those options are there for you. And let's talk about our topic. I'm really excited about the topic. I'm excited about my guest. We're going to be exploring the various craving types. You know, how many of you find that in the evening you reach for those potato chips, or if you're tired during the day, you go for a candy bar, or if you're dealing with some stressful situation, you know, stuffing your mouth with something, and before you know it, you know, you're just gone through a package of whatever and suffering the consequences of it, suffering food that you're eating when you don't really want to eat or need to eat. So we're going to be talking about the various craving types and how to eliminate the cravings, that the food cravings that control our life. So this is a really important topic. My guest today is Julia Ross, who's the author of a brand new book called The Craving Cure, Identify Your Craving Type to Activate Your Natural Appetite Control. Really great topic. And just a little bit about Julia Ross, who's an amazing woman. She is a pioneer in the use of nutritional therapy for the treatment of eating disorders, addictions, and mood problems. The director of several integrative treatment clinics in the San Francisco Bay Area since 1980, Julia also trains and certifies health professionals and lectures widely. She is the author of the best-selling books, The Mood Cure and The Diet Cure. Her work has been featured in publications from Vogue to the American Psychological Association. And it's always a pleasure to welcome Julia to the show. It's been a long, long time since Julia's been on my program, so I'm excited to have her back, and I want to welcome Julia to the show. Hello, hello, and welcome, Julia.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to be back.
Well, I have to say, I was thinking back to when we first, I've known about your work for ages, and then we met when we were at the Cancer Control Society.
Yes.
Many moons ago now, but I know we had a meal together, and it was such a pleasure to make that personal contact because you were such an inspiration for me in my practice as a psychotherapist and as a naturopath. Your work is so profound and has provided such a solution for people in all the areas, the mood cure, the diet cure, and now the craving cure. So I'm just so thrilled that we've reconnected and we can have this conversation about a topic that is just so important for people. So first of all, congratulations on your new book.
Well, thank you. As I was telling you before we went on the air, it really should be a congratulations for surviving this book. I'm particularly glad to be talking to you about it because you have a real understanding of the kinds of problems that called for this book. You know, I didn't actually plan to produce as much of a book as I did. I wanted to give people a kind of a shorthand way of escaping from their addictions to various kinds of foods they would prefer not to be eating. But I realized that I had to put it in context. You know, how did we all get stuck in this trap of eating food that we really don't want to be eating? And, you know, how did more than 70% of us become overweight, and most of the overweight have become obese? This is a new phenomenon, and a lot of people, especially people who are younger than I am, really aren't aware. They never lived during a time where all of this wasn't everyday reality.
I know, it's terrifying when you think of 70% of the population is struggling with this, and all the consequences from carrying excess weight, or, you know, fat, basically, and how it's compromising our heart, and it's compromising our immune system, and digestive
and our blood
system,
sugar,
and our brain, and our blood sugar. I mean, you know, it we're out of control, and so few people these days actually feel well and balanced.
That's
and
right.
Healthy. We've forgotten what that was like. So that's why your work is so important. And you know, you've always been such a pioneer, Julian, in the work you have done, giving solutions that you talked about in the Mood Cure and the Diet Cure with nutrition, but from some very targeted supplementation, which we'll talk about, that you have really mastered in using in your clinic and in your training programs. I guess I'd like to just start out by asking you, how did you find the key that has been so successful in dealing with some of these chronic issues with in the past, like with the Mood Cure and the Diet Cure? What was it that got you on that path?
Well, it was failure. I talk about this in the beginning of most of my books, but the fact was that I was a psychotherapist who was a specialist in addiction, and the director, the newly named director of an outpatient clinic, and it was just at that moment that the crack epidemic hit, and we experienced, and when I say we, I mean clinicians all across the country, experienced 100% failure within 24 hours and 100% relapse within 24 hours of a first visit. We'd been working with alcoholism and had about a 50% success rate, and that was entirely gone. All the techniques that we'd developed and thought were, you know, so marvelous, and they were actually, but they didn't help with crack addiction. And fortunately for me, right about that time, the new field of neuroscience, the study of the brain, produced the answer for all of us. And that answer was that the impulses, the craving impulses, whether for cocaine or Snickers, all rise from the brain and from very specific areas of the brain. That we can study and identify. We can see that part of the brain light up in the presence of the drug substance. And one of those scientists knew how we could go about correcting that aberrant brain chemistry and turning off those cravings. They really don't belong there. That's not part of, you know, our legacy, of our appetite legacy. We're supposed to be quite satisfied with, you know, roots and berries and antelope and, you know, all of our original foods rather than the non-foods that we're eating now. They're really, I call them bliss bombs in the book because of their effect on the brain. But at any rate, he suggested just a small handful of nutrients were known by, you know, brain chemists everywhere and any biologist to nourish the areas of the brain that that were really in distress and sending out these crazy cravings. And that was where we started. I had a nutritionist on board in my clinic trying to see if diet would make a difference, but our clients weren't stable enough to even change their diet, so we couldn't tell. But as soon as we gave these isolated nutrients, I mean as soon, you know, within the first week, we saw dramatic improvement. And so I began to use them with all kinds of addicts. And eventually, a couple of years later, I started a clinic entirely for food-addicted people. And we used these nutrients and saw even more extraordinary relief from these cravings than the alcohol and drug addicts experienced.
So if you were so successful, why hasn't this approach been used everywhere now?
Well, you and every sensible person I've ever spoken to has asked me the same question.
Right.
And, well, I'll tell you what. The alcohol and drug addiction field is very peculiar. It's very, very closed. You know, the people who run the programs tend to be people who were able to get clean and sober on, you know, psychotherapy and 12-step programs and so forth. But that's a tiny minority of the people that they're now trying to help who are getting nowhere. So I finally gave up on introducing these kinds of techniques, even though we were having such success and I wanted to share this with them. And it's still a very closed field. But when I published The Diet Cure, I was inundated with interest. Every publisher wanted to publish it. I was like Cinderella in New York City. You know, and I was, you know, going from place to place and hearing the saddest stories from the personnel at the publishing houses. And they said, this is going to sell wonderfully because you don't have to go through professionals. You know, these books are going to sell directly to the people who need them. And sure enough, you know, they have sold very well, and I, you know, I haven't been frustrated. But the reason I wrote The Craving Cure was because, as well as, you know, my books have done, the problem has continued. And it's why I train professionals now. Let's get this out there so more and more people can be benefited. But when I saw the statistics, when I realized the extent of, you know, the consequences of 21st century food addiction, that's when I realized I have to do another book because the word is out, but it's just not penetrating fast enough, and we don't have time to go at the rate that it's going. So I wrote this book, and I negotiated with one of the biggest publishers in the world, Macmillan, and I was very honest with them. I said, you know, the point of this book is to save the world. If you're not interested, I will go elsewhere. And they said, well, it just so happens that we publish worldwide. We'd love to save the world. And so I'm hoping that I'll have the same kind of response, only bigger this time, and really make it international because the problem itself has become international. It's like a wildfire out of control. But these techniques are good enough to put that fire out. And so I'm so glad to be on this show and to be promoting the book in order to get this, you know, this emergency first aid to people everywhere who are suffering.
Absolutely. You know, when you first started with addicts, I mean, that's a certain population. People had issues with food, that's a certain population. But right now, the craving issue in the craving community
it's universal, practically.
It's universal. You know, I just want to share a couple of things. I recently interviewed a great guy, Dr. Jeff McNeary, on my show. He used to be the director for Passages, the rehab center. And he would talk about his total frustration of how ineffectual the system was, why it never worked, why people relapsed, why they had to keep drugging these people. And he left, and he is now the medical director at a place, a retreat center in Costa Rica called Rhythmia, which I've done some shows on. That's another story.
Oh.
But where he gets phenomenal results, but they're working in a totally different paradigm, working with plant medicine and the shaman and working on that level with phenomenal results, because you've got to work outside of the box. It's, you cannot get results by trying to do whatever they do in rehab centers, right?
No.
It just doesn't work. And the second thought I had, I recently had Dr. Joel Fuhrman on the show, and he has a new book called The Fast Food Genocide. And he was talking about how everything that we consume these days is designed to keep us in that craving mode, to keep us addicted, and how they've, you know, the industry has created intentionally foods that make us addicted to them. And as we get into the conversation today, as you add the emotional component and the stress component and the nutritional deficiency component, people can understand why they're so out of balance and the craving tendency takes over a person's life. So, you know, it's all these pieces are coming together now, Julia, to give people real hope and real solutions. And what I love about your work, it's really simple. It's not difficult. It's not expensive to do. You don't have to really be under the auspices of, of a psychiatrist or whatever. It's kind of like a program that you can do it yourself.
And
safely, you know.
And that's probably the true reason why it hasn't spread. Let me give you an example. I was doing an in-service in a sort of an integrated medical center here in Northern California. And there were conventional physicians and NDs and nutritionists and so forth available to, you know, patients. And they wanted me to do an in-service. And I began talking, and I could see that the conventional MDs were just not, you know, they were shut down as soon as I talked about how fast these nutritional techniques worked. And so we started talking about that. And I asked them, have you ever found or, you know, practiced a technique that was successful in 80 to 90 or more percent of your patients? And they hadn't ever. So they literally couldn't accept that there could be something this simple that would be this effective. And so I could see that the effectiveness itself is one of the things that makes it hard to sell. In fact, in the introduction to the book, I say, you know, I realize that you think that magic bullets are, you know, to be avoided, and it's just got to be tremendously hard work, and you've got to be fighting it all the time, and that relapse is built in, and it's never going to be easy. And none of that is true. You know, these really are magic bullets that I'm talking about, these specific nutrients. There are only 5 of them. Each one addresses a different part of the brain that is producing a unique type of craving. And so I'm hoping that this time, the simplicity in our urgent need, you know, will be embraced.
So let's talk about cravings. Let's talk about craving types. What is a craving?
Well, let's distinguish it from hunger, first of all, because a lot of people don't understand that. So hunger is, you know, our natural appetite at work, letting us know that it's been too long since we've eaten whole foods. And a craving is something that can't be satisfied. We always want more. Whereas hunger, by nature, is satisfied. You know, as soon as we eat, that signal turns off. But the craving signal is a different signal that actually overrides our natural appetite chemistry. And that's one of its most dangerous features, is that we lose our way. You know, we don't want the kind of food that is going to keep us healthy and that that always kept us healthy until sometime in the 1970s when we made about 5 major dietary alterations to the traditional world diet that have landed us in this emergency situation, and specifically turned our brains into the craving factories, so that the chemicals in the brain are either stimulated very briefly by whatever drug-like food we're consuming, or for longer periods of time trying to adapt to not having them and actually going into a withdrawal state where we start wanting them, thinking about them more and more and more until we finally have to have them. And most people are living that way and eating drug-like foods more, from morning till night, because of the power of these five areas of the brain.
And when we talk about craving food, we're not talking about people who crave cucumbers or crave apples or crave, egg salad, right? that would not be considered a craving. That would, even if you did eat a lot of cucumbers or peppers or something, it's not the same as a craving that we're talking about, right? Or is it? I don't know.
No. The only item that you listed that can trigger some of the same things, with people who try and stay away from, sugary products, find themselves gravitating to apples, which happen to be one of the fruits highest in fructose, which is now the primary sweetener in all of our food, our commercially prepared foods, and is significantly more addictive than sucrose, which is the table sugar that we were using before the 1970s, when high fructose corn syrup, agave syrup, and fruit syrup started to be heavily used. And fructose is one of those drug-like foods I was talking about when I said that can override the body's natural appetite controls. It specifically turns off at least three of them so that we don't know that we're satisfied and we keep wanting to eat.
Wow. So, before I can ask you questions about the fruit, but I think we have more important things to focus on. Myself, but what are the different types that you have identified, Julia? Because you break them down into these categories that cover everybody's craving issue.
Well, there are five of them. As I've been mentioning, five areas of the brain that that each part of the brain involved in this appetite chemistry puts out a different signal. So, for example, one of them puts out a happy signal, a sunny signal, a positive signal, and if that particular center is malfunctioning, then we have cravings for easing these feelings of discomfort and depression. So, we've got the depressed eaters, I call them, and those people are low in serotonin, which is a neurotransmitter produced in the brain that has everything to do with appetite and pleasure and being able to feel happy naturally. So when that level of optimal level of serotonin isn't operating, then we start to crave sweets and starches, which can temporarily force those cells to release some extra serotonin. Unfortunately, in the long run, of course, that runs down our serotonin stores. And the more sweets and starch we eat, the less of the real fuel that those cells need, which is protein, we consume. So it's really a vicious cycle. So that the first one is the depressed craver who craves to improve their mood. The second type of craver is somebody who tends to be hypoglycemic. I call them the crashed cravers because they're experiencing too many low blood sugar episodes. When our blood sugar drops too low, it ignites a pretty ravenous a craving for, again, sweets. Starches will pinch hit because they can be converted into sugar in the mouth in seconds. But, you know, all the movies where diabetics who sometimes have very low blood sugar, they're always having somebody rush a glass of orange juice to them. So this is the kind of thing that most of the population is experiencing now because we don't eat regular meals, and so our blood sugar levels can drop anytime during the day and thrust us into that particular type of craving where we're headachy and cranky and have a hard time focusing. So then we've got the comfort cravers who are looking for pure enjoyment, comfort from, you know, the emotional pain, a sense of reward in life, because their own brain's production of our natural painkiller, the endorphins, just isn't up to par. And that can happen quite easily because as our diet deteriorates, again, our intake of protein drops, and it takes a lot of protein to build in a brain supply of endorphin. So the comfort cravers, they're most likely to gravitate towards chocolate and ice cream for a couple of particular reasons, which I could get into later if you like. And then the fourth of the five cravers is a stress craver, and they're more the nibbler and the grazer on you know, popcorn and chips and that kind of thing while, you know, on the computer or trying to deal with whatever stress is either currently going on or they're trying to recover from. And the level of our stress, of course, in general has gone up remarkably. And again, worldwide, the World Health Organization is very, very concerned about the stress problem worldwide. We can get a sense of natural tranquility because there is a brain chemical called GABA, which gives us that sense of ease and relaxation. And some people can get it temporarily, again, from a drug-like effect of fast food. And then finally, we've got the fatigued cravers who need the caffeinated, you know, the caffeinated sodas, the dark chocolate, or just pure sugar for them, you know, gumdrops and things like that work to briefly turn on the natural brain stimulants like dopamine, also pleasurable, but really facilitate attention and focus.
So if anyone listening is upset, if they're thinking they can't have their chips or their gumdrops or their caffeine or you know, their tons of fruit, I think that's a sign, right? Pay attention. You may fit into one of those categories. You may be a craver. I mean, our food has become so toxic that we've been hijacked. Our taste buds have been hijacked. Our brain chemistry has been hijacked, which is why we're in such trouble, isn't it?
It is. And again, there are lots of people, you know, running around today who've been born since this problem began in the 70s. They don't know that it could be any different. And so the fact that, again, you know, our overweight and obesity rate is over 70%, and our diabetes rate is now over 50% as of this year. There's even a third type of diabetes, which is Alzheimer's. It's been labeled diabetes 3. And they don't know because, really, the studies haven't been there until recently, but this kind of diet that's been evolving since the 1970s, it's primarily prepared food with very clever food chemistry behind it, brain-targeted chemistry. They're not aware that in order to get this kind of drug-like effect and keep people coming back to their products, that the actual nutrient content of the food has had to drop lower and lower and lower, you know, to get more sugar into a product, to combine the different elements that are going to create a bliss bomb. There's just no room for real nutrients. And so at this point, the average American is eating a diet that's 60% nutrient void, actually has no nutrient content. So the majority of the food that we're eating is really stripping us rather than providing anything except, you know, brief drug experiences and calories.
Yeah, that's such a shocking statistic. I think it's really not just waking up to the problem, but what you're doing is providing a solution and an understanding. So it leads me to my next question, Julia. Can you help us understand the role of the brain in relationship to craving behaviors?
Well, let me get a little more brain-targeted in my explanation of how the brain types came to be identified. I mentioned that the first craving type, the depressed craving type, was low in serotonin. So the brain has five different functions that are intended to make us enjoy food and are also intended to alert us as to when we need it and when we don't need it. And the kinds of foods that we're eating now force these five parts of the brain into unnatural activity. So that we get a real high from what we're eating. It's not weak willpower that draws us back to a Snickers bar. It's really the fact that it's a combination of foods that affects very specific parts of the brain in very reliable, you know, manner. So we get the same kind of high each time we have it, and we are unable really to stop eating it because the effect on the brain is so powerful that it is literally, when they look at it with MRI and other brain scanning devices, it looks as though the person who just had the chocolate infusion had just had a heroin infusion. And we know from all of the brain work on alcohol and street drugs just exactly which parts of the brain have which effects and which drugs affect different parts of the brain. So, for example, heroin targets our craving type 3, our comfort craver, because it gives pleasure and it kills pain. So that's what the food is actually doing. It's plugging in to the receptors that our natural endorphin is supposed to be plugging into and tricking the brain into thinking that there's a huge surge of endorphin coming when it's actually a huge surge of chocolate coming. And so it sets up a very similar addictive dynamic, a big surge and then a deficiency, which makes us want more.
So the fact that our cravings are initiated by deficiencies of key nutrients for the brain is a really big paradigm shift, because if you can understand and recognize that you have a, when you have this information, this knowledge, and when you have a craving, you can recognize it for what it is, the deficiency of a key nutrient in the brain, and then we'll talk a little bit about the amino acids and the diet that supports the production of these neurotransmitters, which can just nip it all in the bud, can it?
That's right, because our natural chemistry, if we can, you know, normalize it again, and we can, gives us ongoing, constant feelings of pleasure, unless, you know, something specific, you know, comes up and we need our stress chemistry to take over for a while. But we are naturally endowed with the ability to feel tremendous enjoyment, you know, with food, with a sunny day, you know, with a hug. So it's all there waiting for us in the brain. The brain is perfectly capable of returning to its original state of providing pleasure, relaxation, enjoyment, confidence. You know, my book, The Mood Cure, was about the mood effects of these neurotransmitters and how deficiency in brain nutrients has ended us up in, you know, epidemic numbers, reaching for antidepressants and anti-anxiety. The same thing is true, because the same parts of the brain that regulate mood so beautifully, if they're well nourished, also keep us maintain our healthy appetite, our native appetite. You know, people may remember that phrase, our native appetite. You know, and that really refers to the fact that we were born to eat healthy food and to enjoy it. Cheryl?
I'm sorry. I'm here. So what you're saying is that the first step that has gotten us into this mess was the fact that we started eating a diet that was devoid of nutrition. Like you said, 60-something percent of food has no nutritional value whatsoever. So now our body is depleted of key nutrients. Then we add the stress of life. So we're adding stress, which depletes key nutrients, which we're not getting from our diet any longer. And the diet that's replacing the healthy diet is a diet that is causing massive imbalance to occur in the body, which doesn't have the resources any longer to correct it and to provide the key nutrients that help with balancing brain chemistry, which controls our behaviors. And there we have a hugely vicious cycle that has gone on and brought us totally out of control here.
You know,
there's
one thing that I think would be good to mention here, and that is that although our sugar intake had been increasing steadily since the early 1900s, in the 1960s, we didn't have any diabetes to speak of, or weight problems to speak of, and so all of this has happened very quickly. And the introduction of high fructose sweeteners, and they're taking over the industry the way they have, is probably the top factor. But we also need to take into account that our traditional intake of protein has, you know, it's nothing like it used to be. We're just, you know, not consuming it. And a lot of it has to do with the emphasis in the 1970s and since on staying away from saturated fat, because really the high protein foods are animal sourced. So we're not eating anywhere near the amount of red meat that we were eating prior to the 1970s, you know, for a couple of million years. That has gotten more entrenched, really. We're eating less and less animal-sourced protein all the time. and advocates for a vegan diet like Joel Fuhrman are really the ones faced with this. And it's so difficult for them to stay away from junk food. I remember reading in his last book about his frustration in getting people to eat the vegan diet that he was proposing. He said, I don't know what else to say to you, but just do it.
and his self-control was the problem.
Right. And so I'm so glad to be able to provide for anybody who's struggling with this problem, regardless of the healthy diet that they're trying to adopt, there is a way to stick with it, experiment with it, see if it works for you. What we find, we've had lots of vegans come here who have not been well. It has not served them well, and they've used the amino acids to help with that. They really have reduced their intake of junk food, vegan junk food, mind you, with the use of these craving eliminators, these nutrients. But many of them have then undertaken what we've proposed as a therapeutic use of animal protein as an experiment, and have found that their health has improved tremendously. Their concentration, their energy. In fact, their energy is the first thing they mention. So a lot of things happened in the 70s that discouraged our use of animal protein, and one of them was the fact that saturated fat is part of just about any animal protein, and we were so afraid of it then, something that we are no longer have to fear. But the other thing was the advent of very influential Indian spiritual practitioners who really persuaded people that the only way to be spiritual was to be vegan and or vegetarian at least. And so there have been a number of things that have contributed to our lack of protein.
And it should be said that the reason why protein is so important is because it's the source of the amino acids that the brain requires to maintain optimal balanced functioning.
That's right. And the amino acids are the fuel that our brain neurotransmitters require. And only five of them, there are about 20 amino acids in whole protein sources, high concentration protein sources, but we only need five of them to completely re-regulate the brain's appetite and pleasure centers.
So can we go through them? Before you jump in to do that, I just want to say, and I know this has been your experience and has been mine, that when people go on a vegetarian, vegan diet, if they're not really conscious and responsible and doing the right things, they will get into a craving cycle because they are so deficient in their amino acids, and becomes a really unhealthy lifestyle choice then. And if they understand this and if they don't want to change for whatever reason, I personally never encourage people to go vegan and even vegetarian. I'm a recovering vegetarian because I didn't do it properly. The amino acids play a role as a way to help them get balanced in their craving issues.
Definitely. Just not getting enough good food, that's the last sort of nail in our coffin from the 1970s when low-calorie dieting really built up ahead of steam. It was sort of an experiment in the 60s, but by the 70s, we were really sold on the idea of Twiggy and that we all needed to lose a lot of weight, and we began to do systematic starvation. And that, again, if we don't eat enough, we are going to crave. It's actually a healthy impulse. But I've seen so many dieters, and universally, they tell me the same story. We went on a radical diet, and we lost some weight. When we got off of it, we regained all the weight and more. It had slowed down our metabolism, and our cravings had increased. And last year, the research on the Biggest Losers confirmed that scientifically you know, and as a headline, you know, to warn people that starvation just has a terrible backlash effect, and the brain is, you know, one of the first areas of the body to feel it, because it doesn't have any stored. There's no place in the brain for storage of nutrients, and when the bloodstream runs low, the brain really suffers.
So that's why when you give an amino acid, you can have almost an immediate response to it.
That's right. Well, they're pre-digested, for one thing. So would you like to talk about the solution to all this?
Yes.
What
yes.
are these silver bullets that I'm talking about? We've hinted at them. So they are individual amino acids. The building blocks of protein. They have long names and very specific duties. And the five that are required by the five parts of the brain that control our appetite. Starting with type 1, the low serotonin depressed craver, is an amino acid called tryptophan. Actually, there are two with the same name that could be used interchangeably pretty much, tryptophan and 5-hydroxytryptophan, known as 5-HTP. So these are things that you can get in any health food store or online, you know, at a supplement venue. The second crashed craver with the low blood sugar cravings, universally immediate benefit from an amino acid called glutamine, which has a myriad of other beneficial effects. Is in fact used in the anti-cancer world for a number of its positive effects, in addition to stopping the cravings and low blood sugar emergency in the brain specifically, but also in the body. It promotes muscle development and the immune system in a big way. So these are not sort of tricky nutrients that, you know, might have a dark side. Although there are some people that, you know, for one reason or another might not want to take one of them. And that's very, very clearly spelled out in the book, if there's anybody that needs to be cautious about any of these. Fortunately, it's unusual to have to forego one of these five aminos. So then the third type, the comfort craver, is fed by a nutrient, an unusual nutrient actually called D-phenylalanine. And that's available in two forms. And I talk in the book about which form would be best, but both of them are available, easily available. To build up our natural endorphin stores, which is a pretty miraculous feat. And then the type 4 stress craver gets another amino acid called GABA, which is our natural tranquilizer. It actually turns down adrenaline in the bloodstream, neutralizes it so that we can go back to that, our natural ability to experience relaxation without treats. And then the last craving type, the fatigued craver, in order to build up our natural energy, our natural ability to focus without the caffeine and the dark chocolate and so forth, we typically use an amino acid called tyrosine, which has an almost immediate effect of mental energy and physical energy for that matter. So that gives us our short list of emergency first aid for the food-addicted brain.
You know, I mean, the reason why I love your work is because, first of all, it's effective and it works. And people can eliminate their cravings, some cases, within minutes, you know. And these amino acids are available over the counter. People can get them. In your book, you are very specific with your instructions, with your protocol, when to take them, how much. You have a questionnaire so people can identify what craving type they are if they don't already know. And it's a how-to book, which is why I just really want to support what you're doing, because it really gives people the roadmap to get them out of that craving cycle and let them be balanced. And, you know, the amazing thing for me, once you stop your cravings, you just get back into a balanced place in general. So you feel more present, you feel happier, your moods are balanced, your energy is improved. So by addressing the cravings and replenishing these deficiencies of the amino acids, which makes it easier to eat healthier food, you're bringing stability and harmony on all levels back into your life again. That's amazing.
I know. It really is too good to be true, isn't it? And you haven't even mentioned the sleep factor.
Let's mention the sleep factor.
Well,
go for it.
At least two of these amino acids are marvelous for sleep. I mentioned the natural tranquilizer GABA. A lot of people can't sleep because they're too tense. They're too stressed out. And GABA is a muscle relaxer as well as a brain relaxer. And for those people who have the kind of night owl syndrome where they sort of wake up at night and then, you know, really can't get to sleep and worry about it and start to dread nighttime because they're not going to be able to get a good rest and they'll be exhausted the next day or have thoughts like, you know, the argument that they had earlier in the day with their office mate going around and around and around in their head. Our natural antidepressant, serotonin, is also the source of one of the most powerful of the relaxing chemicals the body makes, and that's melatonin. It's literally intended to get us to sleep, and it's made out of serotonin. So if we don't have enough serotonin to prevent our cravings and to prevent our having unnecessarily negative thoughts and feelings, we're very likely not going to be able to get to sleep either. So by taking tryptophan, which converts into both serotonin and melatonin, we have this double whammy. And there's been quite a bit of research confirming that if we get less than 8 hours of sleep, our ability to lose weight diminishes, because the hormones that encourage the body to burn calories are turned down. So it's terribly important for those people who need a craving cure and have a natural weight that they want to, you know, understandably get rid of, to get enough sleep. One of our recent clients in our virtual clinic was just telling us that she's been keeping a sleep log, and if she doesn't get enough sleep, she will sometimes gain as much as 2 pounds. And now that she's on the amino acids, that doesn't happen anymore. So it's very dramatic when it does happen. And for whatever reason, life circumstances, she has two twins, you know, sometimes get in the way. And so now she, you know, has a pretty good idea, since she was chronically unable to get to sleep at night, how her weight got to where it did. Not only was it her poor diet, but it was also her inability to sleep.
Right. Do you prefer people do tryptophan rather than take melatonin?
I prefer that they start with tryptophan because it's much more of a nutrient. It serves a lot of different purposes in the body, and particularly with children. And I do talk in the book about helping for parents, how they might help their children with some of these issues too. So if tryptophan isn't enough, Then I recommend that people add melatonin. And sometimes they don't need the tryptophan at night. They just need the melatonin. But we have a lot of people who take tryptophan and get right to sleep, and other people who have more stubborn problems and need the melatonin or even two-stage melatonin if they have trouble getting to sleep and they have trouble in the night. And there's some other, there's another type of insomnia I actually talk about it in my chapter on insomnia in The Mood Cure, and I have an article on it in the Mood Cure website. So we found only one type of insomnia that doesn't respond to the amino acids. And we've got a solution for it, but it's kind of off topic for us. So just want people to know that whatever type they have, there's a solution for it.
Well, yeah, so the Mood Cure is a place to go. So let's talk about where people can go to learn more. The best website, I believe, is juliarosscures.com.
It is, because it has all the books and all the training information and the store and everything else. And our virtual clinic, all in one site.
Right. So you have a virtual clinic, which allows people to schedule consultations with your staff.
With our nutritionists on staff, yes, to help them with their craving cures or their insomnia cures. It's a two-pronged virtual clinic.
So that means people from anywhere in the world can schedule an appointment if they want some personal guidance, or they can go to your website, which is juliarosscures.com, or they can pick up the book, The Craving Cure, which subtitle is Identify Your Craving Type to Activate Your Natural Appetite Control. So there you will learn what amino acids and what diet can best support stopping this craving cycle and freeing you from the addiction to food, which is such a gift. So Julia Ross, it's just been such a pleasure. You're such an inspiration. I wish you all the success with your new book. You will be saving lives throughout the world, and it's quite a mission you have. And I'm so glad that you are sharing your wonderful work. It's making such a difference.
Well, thank you for helping me to get this word out. And all the
Absolutely.
Best to you, Cheryl.
Thank you so much. So please pick up a copy of Julia Ross's book, The Craving Cure. It will change your life, I promise you. And until next time, what I like to remind you all is remember the wisdom and honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.